What Friends Do. Written by Trixree. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Star Wars. Rating, explicit. Relationships. Cody, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And 212th Attack Battalion, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Also tagged for, Obi-Wan Kenobi needs a hug. Obi-Wan Kenobi is a mess. Mutual pining. Hurt comfort. But mostly comfort. Orgy. Intersex Obi-Wan Kenobi. But sci-fi intersex. That's not how the Force works. Oral sex. Gratuitous abuse of Mandoa. Post-Rocco Hardeen arc. And in which the 212th steals their general. Part 1 of the What Friends Do verse. Produced for Marianas for ITPE 2023. Cody would say that he and the general are friends. It didn't happen overnight, but rather so gradually that Cody didn't realize it was happening until it already had. They were simply Marshal Commander and General, until they somehow became Cody and Obi-Wan. Cody and Obi-Wan exist in the quiet moments in the general's quarters, hunched over pads of paperwork, so grueling it's hard to tell whether or not their eyes are burning because of the sheer loss or because of the exhaustion. They exist when the 212th concludes a rough campaign and Obi-Wan is so unsteady that he can't even manage to meditate properly, and begs Cody with his eyes and with the tired hunch of his shoulders to linger long enough that he can anchor himself against Cody's force signature, whatever that means. They exist when Cody, having lost one too many Voda, confesses with burning eyes and bruised knuckles that Prime had named him Kota, but all it has ever felt like was an insult. They're friends. They care for each other in a way that only they uniquely can. Two superior officers distant from others because they have to be. Because the Marshal Commander and the Negotiator are the ones that have to have their shit together. But when they're alone, just Cody and Obi-Wan, they can go to pieces and know that the other will be there to weather the storm. And if Cody has to keep a tight lid on the place where friendship bleeds into something more, something deeper, then so be it. They're the only outlet the other has at times. Cody won't let any measure of attraction, sexual or otherwise, ruin that. Obi-Wan deserves the galaxy, and Cody would rather die than change the shape of them into something his general might not want. But the fact remains, Cody and the general are friends. This is why, the very moment his general's face materializes in hollow blue, Cody knows that this is an Obi-Wan moment, not a General Kenobi moment. He looks awful, frankly. He somehow looks worse than he did when they parted in the hangar not 5 hours ago for the 212th's increasingly rare mandated leave on Coruscant. The dark circles under his eyes have somehow grown to look more like bruises than anything, and his hair is disheveled in a particular way that means he's been running his hands through it, a nervous habit that Obi-Wan is careful to reserve only for private moments. Cody has the urge to reach out and smooth it down, to pull on Obi-Wan's shoulder, fold him into his side, and keep him there until the world becomes manageable again. But that's not a thing that Natborn friends do, so Cody swallows the impulse. Cody's already alone, tucked away in Fox's private quarters while his Orivod finishes up some mess or other, because they had plans to race each other into drunken oblivion, so there's no concern about addressing his general by his name. Obi-Wan, Cody greets. Obi-Wan visibly sags, as if even hearing his name from Cody's lips is a relief. Cody, he rasps, and his voice is worn like he's been shouting for hours. A painful little smile crosses his face, more of a wince than anything. I'm afraid I have just gotten myself into something outrageously stupid. Something like fear spasms in Cody's chest. Where are you? He asks, careful to not sound alarmed. It's like taming a rabid Nexu sometimes to get Obi-Wan to accept help. If Cody betrays the depth of his true feeling, Obi-Wan will get spooked. I'll come to you. I'll come to you and we can fix whatever it is together. I'll never not come to you when you need me, or even when you want me. Did you know, Obi-Wan begins, bypassing the question entirely, that Anakin was a slave before he came to the temple? No, Krith, Cody did not know that. No, I didn't, he offers, coaxing. Maybe he can get something out of him if he lets this conversation play out in the direction that Obi-Wan is leading it. In all the ways he's seen his general over the year plus of the war, he's never seen Obi-Wan like this. He looks genuinely wrecked, genuinely broken. It's terrifying in a way Cody won't dare articulate. He was. My master freed him. Won him, really. And then died not even a week later. The smile comes again, a painful little twist of Obi-Wan's mouth. With his dying breath, my master made me swear to take Anakin as my own Padawan. So I did. Anakin hasn't ever slept alone. He and his mother only had one bedroll, and he couldn't manage to sleep if I wasn't there. A painful, shuddering inhale. Anakin slept in my bed, clinging to me like a Kowakian monkey lizard, until he was 14 years old, Cody. Every single night that I wasn't out on a mission, in the early days when I didn't know any better, I'd wake up and find him sleeping on the ground outside my bedroom door. The holo flickers as Obi-Wan scrubs a hand harshly over his face. How old were you? Cody asks. He's never been told this much about Obi-Wan's life. At least, not this much about something that mattered. He's heard salacious, wild stories of his days as a knight, and innumerable little anecdotes here and there intended to make Voda blush and cackle during the rare downtime of a ground campaign. But never this. Never this raw vulnerability. 20, Obi-Wan replies. Not that it really matters. He hasn't been looking into the lens of the holo recorder, not once this entire conversation. But now he does, and his eyes look wounded. Cody, if something were to ever happen to me, and the words make his inside spasm, I need you to look after him. Of course, Cody says immediately. He doesn't even have to think about it. And then he adds, Beskar firm, because this is no less important. Obi-Wan, nothing is going to happen to you. You're scaring me, he doesn't say. Obi-Wan can probably read it on him anyways, if the way his next weak smile becomes guilt-ridden is any indication. Where are you? Cody asks again. I'm all right, Cody, Obi-Wan placates, rubbing at his face again. I'm all right. He swallows, feeling like he's missing something enormous, feeling like he's just a cadet again and Alpha 17 is scowling over Cody's performance in some training module or other, telling him with his eyes and his posture that he's disappointed because Cody should be better. "You said that you've gotten yourself into something stupid," he prompts. "Yes," he sighs. "I'm afraid I have. Cody, I..." "Where are you?" He wants to reach through the screen and grab him, haul him up by the arms, crush him against his chest, and keep him there. But he can't, because that isn't how this works. If he does, the line will get so blurry that he's not quite sure he'll be able to put it all back when the moment passes. But Obi-Wan has never looked so vulnerable. "Please," Cody urges. "Please tell me where you are." Obi-Wan ducks his head, hiding his face from view. The holo image flickers, or perhaps Obi-Wan's shoulders truly do jump and shudder. An eternity's worth of silence passes between them. There's fire in his eyes when Cody raises his head again. "I'll see you soon, Cody. Koyaki." Cody doesn't have a chance to return the sentiment before the call disconnects. The next day, the 212th ships out without their general, on direct orders from the Senate. When they come out of hyperspace on the other side of the galaxy, it's all over the news. Obi-Wan Kenobi is dead. "He's not dead," Cody hisses, staring Helix down like he dares him to challenge him on it. "I talked to him the day before. He was off. He said that he was about to do something outrageously stupid. He asked me to..." He swallows hard. Swallows like he can't swallow this lie, whatever it is. "He asked me to take care of Skywalker if something were to happen to him. Whatever this is, he knew about it beforehand." Helix sighs, looking about as exhausted as Cody feels. "And the general wouldn't have just gone quietly to his death," he concludes. "Criff, Cody, Criff, what has he gotten into now?" He can only shake his head as he pours them another shot of terrible, awful moonshine. The whole 212th has been drinking on and off all day. They've practically emptied out the stills. Every single one of them is mourning or vehemently denying the possibility that Kenobi might actually be dead. The particularly ambitious Voda among them are doing both simultaneously. Ghost Company has got the market cornered on getting blackout drunk in their grief, if grief is even the word for this. They commandeered Cody's quarters and haven't left since the news broke. It's not like there's anything to be done, anyways. The Senate clearly just wanted them out of the way for whatever carking nonsense they've got planned for their general. All they're doing is sitting around guarding a supply line that no one gives a criff about. "Go park the negotiator here and look scary," the Senate said. "Yes, sirs," Cody had said back, because those are the only words the Senate wants to hear from a clone. Boyle, hunched over a Duraplast cup of what may as well be lighter fluid, scowls at the floor. "Of course he's not dead, but wherever he is, it can't be good." Waxer puts a hand on the back of his redeur's neck and squeezes. His eyes are red-rimmed from crying. "He doesn't have us," Longshot murmurs. He's laid out on his back with Wooly's hands buried in his hair. "Yes, he does," Cody growls, voice nearly subsonic. "Because we are going to be here when he comes back." "I'll see you soon," Obi-Wan had said, and Obi-Wan has never lied to Cody. They're friends. Obi-Wan wouldn't lie to him. Not a single member of the 212th adds General Kenobi's name to their remembrances, because their general isn't dead. On the second day after the news breaks, nursing a truly wicked hangover, Cody calls Skywalker. Cody doesn't voice his suspicions. He takes one look at the sheer pain in Skywalker's eyes and knows he can't. There's a reason Obi-Wan mentioned him. There's a reason for everything Obi-Wan said that night. There has to be. So Cody simply listens to Skywalker talk. He listens to him cry a bit and tries to picture a little boy sleeping on the floor outside his master's bedroom just for company. And when the conversation peters out into a sputtering, awkward end, two people that love the same man, two people wholly unable to admit to it, struggling to connect in the aftermath of that man's apparent assassination, Cody calms Rex and makes sure that Rex is keeping an eye on things too. "How are you holding up?" Rex asks. Cody swallows 1,001 responses. "Poorly," is what he lands on. They light candles. Not a single Natborn officer is on the negotiator for this Ossic posting, only furthering Cody's belief that this mission was just to get them out of the Criffing way. Natborns don't need to be gotten out of the way. Natborns aren't just uppity droids with attachment issues. So the 212th are free to express themselves however they damn wish. And someone digs up candles. The observation deck is a sea of them. Little flickering flames and the smell of warm wax fill the whole room. A collection of their own stars to match those outside the viewport. Vodo rotate in and out of the room all day. There's an unspoken rule of silence that's maintained among those that come to visit. Not a single candle is allowed to burn out. Chris is the first to know. He's been monitoring every single network, news station, and chat forum in existence with the dedication of a man crazed. Helix cut him off of Stim's two rotations back. But still, Chris is the first to know. "He's alive!" he shouts, nearly sobbing with it, thrusting a pad into Cody's hands. And there, right there on screen, is a photo of their general, his Obi-Wan, startlingly hairless but undeniably alive, under a headline that reads, "An undercover mission to save the Supreme Chancellor. The negotiator returns from the dead." "Okay," Cody whispers. He repeats the word until it gains volume. "Okay," he says eventually. "Let's go get him." They are not, in fact, allowed to go get him. Firstly, there's a press circuit that their general is required to run. The chancellor asked for it himself. The hero that risked it all to save him should deserve some of the time in the spotlight. Cody watches every carking interview and knows, deep in his gut, that the general hates every second of it. Secondly, when the Sith-damned press circuit ends and they should, by all rights, be able to go get their general, the Senate tells them they have to stay where they are. Their next campaign is in the Christes system, closer to the negotiator's current position. So some of the Cory boys will be ferrying the general straight to them. Cody knows it's bad by the set of the general's jaw on some of those interviews. His hair still growing back as fine, peach-colored fluff. He knows it's worse than bad when Rex calms him to let him know that his general and Cody's general are not on speaking terms. He knows it's crypt beyond all belief when his general never calls. He doesn't have a damn clue about how bad it really is until the general steps off that shuttle and back onto the negotiator. His hair has made an admirable bid at returning to its former length, no longer peach fuzz fine, and his beard is coming in as well. For this, he looks more like their general. This is where the similarities stop. "Force," Felix breathes, stiffening at Cody's side, as the general comes fully into view down the ramp of the transport. "Force is right. Kenobi is thin, his cheeks gaunt. Where his skin could once have been described as fair, now it's only a sickly sort of pale, like all the blood has been drained out of his face. He holds himself stiff and rigid, a posture that he's never assumed while aboard the Negotiator. He's wearing every possible layer of his Jedi robes, his hands buried deep in the sleeves. The 212th had thought his return would be a unanimous cause for celebration, but all it takes is one measly look to know that celebrating isn't quite in the cards. Someone has put their general through the shredder, and the feeling that charges the air can only be called protective fury. The assembled troops offer words of consolation as the general passes, heading straight for Cody and Helix. The latter practically vibrating with tension. Where before the general might have stopped to exchange words with his men in return, now he doesn't. It seems to be all the general can do to remain upright. Still, when he gets within grabbing distance of Cody, the general makes an attempt at a smile. A Sith-spitting awful attempt, to be frank, but an attempt nonetheless. As the Marshal Commander, there are things Cody needs to say to his general. Things he needs to bring to him in an official capacity. Things that the Republic and the Gar as a whole would consider priorities. But right now, he is not the Marshal Commander. He is Cody, and there will never be a greater priority than Obi-Wan's well-being. So instead of any of the things that need to be said, Cody turns their traditional Mandalorian greeting, a grip of each other's forearms, into a full-fledged embrace. Obi-Wan fights it for a moment, going stiff and unyielding, but Cody doesn't relent. And, with pressure, Obi-Wan caves. It's startling how well they simply fold together, armor be damned. "Welcome home," Cody says. A sigh, more like a gasp, escapes Obi-Wan. Cody feels fingers worm their way under his chest plate and dig in tight to his blacks. When the general doesn't respond and simply starts shaking, quivering like a wet tuka, Cody exchanges a worried, wide-eyed glance with Helix. "I'm so sorry," Obi-Wan murmurs, barely audible. Luckily for them, the whole hangar bay has gone silent. The only sound, the shuffling of boots as the rest of the battalion presses in to be close. "You have nothing to be sorry for," he replies, and doesn't release his grip for a second. Obi-Wan lets out a laugh that feels more like a sob than anything else, his two bony chests expanding against the unforgiving plastoid of Cody's armor. "The Council asked me to die in my Padawan's arms, and I said yes," Obi-Wan says, ragged. "I have more things to be sorry for than I can count." Obi-Wan doesn't sleep. He doesn't meditate. He's quiet where he used to be loud. Instead of sharing his laughter freely with the men on board the Negotiator, he's withdrawn and sullen. He flinches if he isn't expecting anyone to approach and feels distant even when he's standing right there. They don't take the candles down. Their general hasn't come home yet. Only 5 rotations after the general's return, Helix orders that at least one member of Ghost be with him always. "Battle shock," he says, among other words like trauma and stress disorder. They try. Gods, do they try. But there's simply no time to rest and coax the general back from wherever he's gone. Not when they're bouncing from battlefield to battlefield without a day's break in between. Obi-Wan is as competent and ferocious on the battlefield as ever, but he begins taking damage at a much higher rate. Blaster burns here and there, cracked ribs from concussive blasts, and bruises dark enough to make even the most hardened medic pale. "I worry he's punishing himself," Helix confesses to Cody, in a rare moment of respite. It's been brought on only because the general has been sedated after getting caught in an explosion at a Sepi base. The two of them stand side by side, staring down at the limp, unconscious form in the med bed. Obi-Wan is riddled with bandages and glistening with a fine sheen of Bacta where he isn't. If he'd been awake when they brought him in, there's no doubt he would have vehemently protested the IV that Helix saddled him with. But he wasn't awake. He was carried in on Wooly's back, unconscious and bleeding heavily from a shard of transparasteel embedded an inch shy of his scalp. If Cody had tried to pretend the sight of that hadn't made him nearly keel over in panic, he'd have had every trooper from here to Corey calling his bluff. Luckily, the gouge wasn't that deep, and Bacta will heal the wound as good as new. Helix stripped Obi-Wan of his Jedi uppers, whatever their proper name is. Cody doesn't know. And the lines of his collarbone are far too prominent for comfort, even through the thin gown he's now wearing. Bruises in all shades of the rainbow decorate his ribs, which would be ghoulishly apparent if not for the lean, too lean, layer of muscle that helps to disguise them. Obi-Wan is covered in scars. Some of them, Cody knows. The shiny burn scar near his hip from their first campaign together. The thick, puckered line down his side that marks the gash Cody had stitched in the field after they'd tumbled down an old mine shaft along with most of Ghost. But most of them he doesn't know. He can't decide which hurts worse, the knowing or the not. "This isn't good, Cody," Helix adds after a moment. "His blood work is atrocious. Not to mention all the Jedi stuff that I don't have the expertise to evaluate to any meaningful degree. Did you know that Jedi can become physically ill if they don't meditate properly? When was the last time he meditated?" "He hasn't," Cody replies, and knows that this can't continue. "We're not deserting," Waxer begins. And judging by the large-scale shudder that works through the assembled battalion, that may not have been the best opener. But he presses forward, undeterred. And Cody is once again reminded why he made this Vod a lieutenant. "We're not deserting," he re-emphasizes sternly. "Because we're not leaving the general. We're right where we need to be. We haven't walked out on our responsibilities. We're just finally owning the one that matters most." When a tentative "Oya!" works its way through the Vode, Cody knows they're on the right path. Helix takes the stage next, climbing atop the mess table they've designated the podium. It's no small feat, assembling most of the 212th in one room. But the mess hall works better than the hangar bay on account of not being filled with fighters and dropships. Like the dutiful medic he is, Helix refuses to share any classified medical information. "It's bad," is all he tells them, grim-faced, and every single one of the Voden knows he isn't bantha-shitting. Sith hells, Helix once pulled a chunk of shrapnel out of Cody's thigh the size of a nat-born baby with no anesthetic and told him to quit his bitching. Helix doesn't exaggerate. Chris gets up next, using a holoprojector to give the rundown on the planet they've selected for their operation. It's a little uninhabited outer rim moon with sprawling beaches, beautiful oceans, and ruins of a civilization so old that even the moon's name has been lost to time, only identified by its serial number on galactic maps, T33E920. The ocean, Chris argues, provides ample resources by the way of food. If there's one thing any clone knows, it's oceans. The aquatic maneuvers experts among them are particularly elated by some of the holos he dredges up. "If the place is so idyllic," a trooper towards the back, named Suck if Cody is correct, and he dearly hopes he is not, asks, "Why is it uninhabited?" Chris sighs. Look, Vod, there are a lot of planets in the galaxy and only so many sentients. Not every single moon can be populated, all right? What? Are you complaining that the corporate machine of the Republic hasn't found this one little bright spot in the universe and commodified the cark out of it until it's just a lifeless tourist attraction? No? Feck, Chris, lay off the kid, Boyle mutters. There are, understandably, no more questions. Cody takes the stage last, eager to cut this whole thing short and get back to the general's bedside. He's still sedated. It's a crucial part of their plan that he stays sedated until they're at least out of Republic space. And it's not as if the general couldn't use the rest. But Cody doesn't like to leave him alone for too long, regardless. Only when he's standing up there does Cody realize that he doesn't really know what to say. They love him. All of them do. Each and every last man of the 212th, in their own way, loves their general. Obi-Wan may currently be reserved for Cody and their quiet, stolen moments of battle-forged solidarity, but it doesn't have to be that way. All of these men love the general, and because they love him, Cody knows they'll love Obi-Wan too. You have a choice, Cody begins. I don't want any of you to think that you don't. If you want no part of this, all you have to do is say so. But if I know any of you half as well as I think I do, this choice won't be particularly hard to make. He takes a deep breath and counts his heartbeats against the reverent silence of the mess hall. We may belong to the Republic, but we were made for the Jetty. There are no objections. It's surprisingly easy to pull off in the end. The only hitch in the plan comes when Obi-Wan's comm rings with the alert for an emergency council meeting. Cody takes the call with Helix at his side, and they find themselves face to face with Master Windu, his scowl made fuzzy with the poor quality connection. They tell the Jedi Masters that Obi-Wan can't take the meeting, as he's in recovery from a procedure to remove shrapnel from his body, an intentionally vague claim, if not incorrect, and is still under sedation. Cody has the urge to kiss Helix flat on the lips when his Vod pulls rank on the Kriffing Jedi Council. With all due respect, Masters, General Kenobi has sustained multiple traumas over the course of the previous campaign, the full extent of which can be read in Commander Cody's report. As his CMO, I have zero compunction denying your request to bring my patient out from heavy sedation for his council's convenience. Helix states, ruthless in his confidence. General Kenobi will return your call when he is fully recovered and able to do so, Cody finishes. The two of them resolve to throw the comm directly into the ocean once they land. They even squabble for the honor. They park the negotiator along an impossibly massive beach. Bits of rubble, old gray stone columns marked with a deep purple algae, stick out of the sand in scattered handfuls, half buried like gravestones. But no part of the planet feels even the slightest bit ominous. The 212th's diving expert, Pask, returns from the ocean and reports with palpable joy and baffled awe that just offshore is a coral reef teeming with life. Overhead, brilliantly pink seabirds trill and caw. The birds are so unused to people that some of the more patient brothers end up spending an afternoon coaxing the birds to perch on them and take food from their hands. Waxer manages to snap a holo of Boyle with a bird standing on his head, bright yellow beak buried in his thick curls. They cut all external communications shortly after the call with the Jedi Council, and just before beginning their jump through several hyperspace lanes in a pattern so random that it'd be impossible to follow. Their internal helmet comms are still operational because they're only short range. This far out from the core, it's impossible to connect to anything but the men standing right beside you. The trickiest bit of their disappearing act was disabling all tracking, signal outputting, and identifying software from the negotiator. It was a good thing that Chris was in on that internal planning meeting held clustered around the general's medbed, whispering furiously about how to save their Dikulta Jetty's life. He had started his men on the task even before choosing a planet to hide on. Cody pins the image from Waxer to their comm record. Obi-Wan will probably want to see it when he wakes up. That is, if he doesn't karking punch Cody's lights out when he finds out what they did. He should be coming around any minute now, Helix murmurs, fiddling needlessly with the IVs he's already disconnected. Stujoni biology? Bastard always shakes off my seds like they're nothing, he grumbles for the millionth time. The seven cycles of rest has already visibly done Obi-Wan some good. He's no longer pale as bleached bones, and the bruised black bags under his eyes have receded. Cody can tell when he starts coming around. Obi-Wan tends to come awake all at once, but there are some minor tells if one knows how to look for them. And after so many ground campaigns and late nights spent hunched over flimsy work in the general's quarters, Cody knows his tells like the weight of his own blaster. His eyes flicker, his eyelids twitching with the random movement. His toes curl under the medbay standard blankets Helix has piled on. Those karking things are thin and useless even by Vodes standards, and they run notably hotter than Obi-Wan ever has. And his breathing changes cadence. Obi-Wan comes awake with a small little sound, a gasp of a thing, and immediately starts trying to leverage himself upright. Easy, sir, Helix chides. He keeps a hand on Obi-Wan's upper back and another on his shoulder, even as Cody's hands twitch to do the same. Easy, take your time. Cody? He sounds dazed, confused, still not quite himself. To hell with the regs. I've already practically committed treason, Cody decides, and catches his general's clammy hand between his own. Immediately, Obi-Wan's eyes snap to Cody's face, his pupils enormously dilated. Whatever Helix had him on must still pack a significant punch, and given the sheer length of Obi-Wan's chart after the shrapnel incident, Cody will hardly begrudge him a little over-medication. Cody... Obi-Wan exhales. A fine tremor races through him. Where? Somewhere safe, he replies, squeezing Obi-Wan's hand. Kata, he runs so cold. Nihukat Kama, Cody says, in the same tone he uses with spooked shinies. Rest, Obi-Wan. It's so clear here, Obi-Wan whispers. And alarmingly, tears start to prickle to life in his eyes. I can feel you, he says, in a voice utterly wrecked with emotion. I can feel all of you. You're so bright. He turns his head to Helix, and with his free hand catches the medic gently by the jaw. Tears spill soundlessly over his cheeks as he declares, awed, I found you again. Cody swallows around a thick catch in his throat, and doesn't fight his instinct to bring Obi-Wan's hand to his lips. We never left, he presses chastely into Obi-Wan's skin, tasting faintly of Bacta. We're right here. No, no, Obi-Wan murmurs insistently. The Force has gone so dark, and you were all lost to me. I couldn't reach you, not even when you were right beside me. We aren't going anywhere. Helix gentles, perching carefully at the edge of Obi-Wan's bed. We've got you on some pretty powerful meds, sir. You'll be feeling floaty for a few hours yet, all right? Rest if you need to. Sedated sleep isn't quite the same as the real thing. Stay, he pleads, as if they'd refuse him anything. Always, Cody swears, and knows he's giving up too much, but can't be bothered to care. Helix has been combing through all of the material he can find on the Jedi since Obi-Wan woke and begged them not to leave him alone. Cody's expecting a breakthrough, so it's really no surprise when Helix throws down the pad he's reading with a harsh clatter and declares loudly, Jatisa are Krifting empaths. The rest of Ghost Company has trickled in over the past few hours to join the bedside watch around their general. Even more Voda have come and gone, too. Wooly, curled up around the general's feet like a tuka, reaches down to where Helix is sitting on the floor and flicks him in the head. "I don't know what that means," he whines, petulant, and Helix slaps his hands away with palpable frustration. "It means that they can feel the emotions of other people and that their networks are extremely karking important. It says here that Jedi use other Jedi to balance themselves, like sending pings from one tower to another in order to calibrate a system," Helix explains. Waxer goes pale for a Fett clone. He was in prison. He was undercover and in prison. The implication is clear. What kind of osic would an empath be feeling in prison? Osikir, Cody breathes and goes cold from head to toe with realization. He said, the words catch in his throat, and he has to begin again. "He said to me when he came back that he died in Skywalker's arms." In his sleep, Obi-Wan has rolled to his side, clutching Cody's hand in both of his like a child would cradle a beloved plush toy. Cody looks at him, really lets himself look, and wonders, "Was this what broke you?" "Shab," Boyle hisses through clenched teeth. "What do we do?" Helix stands, visibly centering himself with a deep, steady breath. "We give him a network." "We aren't Jedi," Longshot protests. It's Cody that responds, knowing it to be true, even if Obi-Wan hadn't woken up in the state he had. "But he can feel us anyway." "I can feel you. I can feel all of you. I couldn't reach you, not even when you were right beside me." When he manages to look away from Obi-Wan's sleeping form, Cody meets Helix's burning eyes. They've always been each other's greatest ally in this, in caring for their mad Jedi. Helix the doctor and Cody the confidant, both desperately trying to keep a quietly suffering man afloat, often against that man's own wishes. "I'll coordinate," Helix says, and Cody knows what he means immediately. They decide to shift Obi-Wan out of the medbay and into the barracks. Touch is important. Touch is necessary, even. The Voda know this better than most. Touch is the first language they learn, even before basic. From their very first days, 2B laid out in enormous cribs fit to hold 10 freshly decanted Vod. They learn the importance of skin. Even now, all Voda carry generations worth of stories in a brush of a shoulder, a touch to the elbow, a bunk shared during a sleep cycle. Cody doesn't want to think of how important touch might be to Jedi. If he does, he might think about how little Obi-Wan seems to touch anyone outside of a fight, and then he'll have to fight the impulse to put his head through a wall. Instead, Cody occupies himself with the transport of his general, carrying the still-sleeping and far-too-light man through the halls to the barracks, most of Ghost at his back. Helix and the men he rounds up have transformed the trooper barracks. Not the officer barracks or the senior officer barracks, but the ones for the unranked troopers. The barracks that are one massive room and rows upon rows of bunks from one wall to the other, into something that Cody can only describe as a nest. Every blanket has been laid out on the floor, enough to cover the entire ground and then some, double stacked towards the center of the room in a raised platform of sorts. Pillows and nests, both standard issue and treasured pieces that have been acquired clandestinely, litter the space. There isn't a single piece of armor in sight, only blacks and, thankfully, an appropriate amount of skin. The raised platform in the center of the mess has been left empty. Longshot and Chris, who accompanied Helix in order to pull this whole thing off, are lounging up against it like tukas that got the cream. Cody can't help but smile at them. His men. They carefully pick their way through the sea of bedding towards that space, and Cody carefully deposits Obi-Wan there, arranging him carefully against a few pillows. Chris and Longshot, already de-shelled, close in on their general like cephalopods with careful reverence. For a moment, Cody is terrified that they're wrong, that this was a colossal overstep, never mind the literal desertion of their posts. He holds his breath, half anticipating Obi-Wan to wake up and demand answers, embarrassed, ashamed, and angry with them. That hall gets swept away the very moment Chris and Longshot curl around him. Obi-Wan sighs, a sound that is so purely relief, and curls in tighter, forehead brushing Chris's chest, feet finding Longshot's and intertwining. "That's just about the cutest thing I've ever seen," Wooly whispers. He shucks off his kit, carefully stacking his armor at the edge of the pile, and races back to their general, where he retakes his position at Kenobi's feet. He yelps when Obi-Wan tucks his cold toes under his shebs. "We would have given you this," Cody thinks, watching fondly even as he struggles to breathe through chest pain, so acute it threatens to bowl him over entirely. "How could you have not known that we would give you this? You impossible, foolish man. How could you have missed the enormity of our devotion to you?" Cody quickly follows in Wooly's footsteps. It is unanimously decided that Ghost gets first shift with the general. Any Voda not on active duty, watching comms for any incoming signals, staffing the bridge and the negotiator's systems, setting a perimeter on the beach, fishing for fresh meat, joins them in the barracks until it's quite literally a sea of Voda. A handful of officers led by Steady, one of Helix's most trusted medics, keeps the cogs turning outside so that those inside can focus on this and only this. Obi-Wan. Cody has been drifting for the last hour or so. Not quite asleep, but not wholly conscious either. As the evening turned to nightfall, Obi-Wan had migrated until he ended up fully sprawled out across Cody's chest. His beard tickles ever so slightly where Obi-Wan has his face tucked into Cody's neck. Helix rests at Cody's right, Waxer at his left. Helix in range to carefully brush his fingers through Obi-Wan's hair every once in a while. There aren't words for this kind of peace. Cody only wishes Rex and his men were here too. Hell, maybe they can convince the 501st to join them. Skywalker seems more tightly wound every criffing day, and at this rate, the baby Jedi is going to make Rex go gray. Obi-Wan makes a sort of snuffling noise against Cody's neck, and the feeling of hot breath puffing out over his skin has him twitching and stirring in all sorts of ways that are extremely inappropriate when one's commanding officer is using oneself as a pillow. Cody doesn't stifle his instinctive response quick enough, and the twitch only rouses Obi-Wan further until a hum and a soft, bleary, "Cody?" Helix's hand makes another pass through Obi-Wan's hair. "I'm here," Cody replies, quiet out of deference for Waxer's soft, sleep-slow breathing on his other side. "How are you feeling?" He feels the flutter of Obi-Wan's eyelashes against his skin, and fights with every ounce of his self-control to repress a shiver. "Kark." "I... warm," he replies. "I don't... where are we?" With each passing second, to Cody's immense relief, Obi-Wan is sounding more and more aware, more like his general. "The negotiator," Cody answers. "It is, technically, true." "You were in bad shape," Helix adds. "Can you take stock for me? Any pain?" Obi-Wan sounds genuinely baffled when he replies. "No, none at all. But I don't understand. Why are..." "You weren't yourself," Cody confesses. "Like a cadet caught somewhere he isn't supposed to be. Helix figured out that Jedi are empaths. We thought this would help." Obi-Wan shifts, pulling back from Cody far enough that when he turns his head, their eyes meet with only a handful of inches between them. Gods, his eyes are so blue. The Force is remarkably clear, Obi-Wan says, as if this is a confession too. And then a moment passes and he adds, voice carefully neutral, we aren't in Republic space anymore, are we? Cody swallows. On his other side, Waxer finds his hand and squeezes. Wooly touches his bare ankle and Chris tucks his nose behind his left ear, curled around Cody's head like a living halo. No, he says, so quiet and yet so loud. We aren't. Obi-Wan closes his eyes. Why? He asks. Just why? It's Helix that answers. Because you were dying. Because we couldn't help you. And then fiercely, because you matter. More than the Republic? Obi-Wan hardly breathes, voice quieter than a whisper. Cody reaches out, braver than he's ever been, thinking desperately, achingly, longingly about that night, and wanting to come to his general more than anything. Wonders what he could have spared him if he'd been just a little bit braver then, and twines their fingers together. We were made to serve the Republic, he says, but we chose to serve you. A sound like a quiet sob trips out of Obi-Wan, and Cody can't breathe for how the sound catches in his chest. The hand in his own goes slack for one heart-stopping moment, and then it grips him tight. I don't, Cody. I can't. So don't, he whispers and leans forward until their heads knock together in a Keldaba. You carry the weight of the entire galaxy with you, and I've watched you drown under it for too long. Let us shoulder it for a while. Cody, Obi-Wan whispers, voice strained to the point of breaking, and so gut-wrenchingly vulnerable that there isn't anything left in Cody strong enough to resist. He closes the scant distance between them and brushes their lips together. It's the gentlest touch Cody has ever known. It's not so much a collision as it is the inevitable end to a very long, very slow fall. Obi-Wan gasps and Cody feels it against his mouth. Stars against his mouth. And fingers are digging into his blacks, nails scraping his chest, pulling, pulling, pulling. Obi-Wan's mouth opens under Cody's own, tongue hot and seeking, and he surges forward to cradle his head in his free hand, tilting just right until he can meet that tongue with his own. Slow drags into a wet heat Cody can't believe he had ever lived without. Every touch, every shift is like a controlled burn, simmering heat in his chest and low in his gut, and every wet slide of their lips together is only kindling to the flame. Obi-Wan is a taste Cody could never manage to describe by any other name. Obi-Wan, 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 as their tongues brush again and again, and Cody could gladly lose himself in the scratch of Obi-Wan's beard against his face. When they part, there are 1,000 different things Cody can read in Obi-Wan's eyes. But the single unifying message is this. Please, let me be selfish. Unwilling to let him move even an inch when he's so clearly desperate for any excuse to stay, Cody slides his fingers into Obi-Wan's hair and uses the touch to urge him into another Keldaba, sharing breath. He rubs slow circles into the hand still locked in Obi-Wan's own. Would you like us to go? Helix whispers. A low, hurt sound, an instinctive gut reaction, a message as clear as criffing day. No, please don't. Shh, Helix answers, and Cody feels the brush of his knuckles against his abdomen as Helix winds an arm around Obi-Wan's chest. He opens his eyes to catch the sight of Helix dropping hot, wet kisses up the length of Obi-Wan's throat. We'll stay, but you tell us to stop if it gets to be too much.
Yes,
Obi-Wan stutters. Cody catches a flash of teeth pinch his pale earlobe and just barely manages to catch Helix's eye over their general's shoulder. There's a heat to answer Cody's own there.
Mushla.
Helix practically purrs.
Kark!
Waxer hisses. Cody props him up enough on the pillows to be able to see his Voda and his general together, and the reason for his curse becomes immediately clear. With eyes fixed fast on Obi-Wan's face, Waxer is practically pinned under Boyle, with Boyle's hand working unmistakably in his lowers.
Can I move you?
Cody asks as Obi-Wan's eyes flutter, Helix working intently on his neck with his mouth. Obi-Wan manages. The breathy quality to his voice is better than any dirty hollow on the net. Better than most music, too.
Gods, he's ours.
Cody rearranges them until Obi-Wan is settled in the open V of his legs, his back pressed tight to Cody's chest with an arm wrapped around his abdomen like a safety bar. Chris splays himself out across Cody's back, added support, and licks a hot stripe from the base of his neck to behind his ear as Helix settles between Obi-Wan's thighs. Wooly, displaced, slides in behind Cody's other shoulder, a mirror to Chris, and passes over Obi-Wan's lips with a caress of his thumb. They kiss, Wooly and Obi-Wan, with Obi-Wan's head resting lightly on Cody's shoulder. When he presses his cheek to Obi-Wan's, he can feel the vibrations of a moan building low and liquid, and catches the faint movement of their tongues together in Obi-Wan's mouth.
You're incredible, Cody whispers, burying the words against Obi-Wan's skin.
You're so incredible.
Stars,
Wooly gasps when he pulls away, lips shining with saliva.
You taste.
Cody cuts him off with his own lips, seeking the very same taste in his Vod's mouth. He moans when he finds it, utterly helpless not to, struck blind and dumb and nearly insensate altogether by the sheer realization that they have him together. His heart beats to the rhythm of hours, hours, hours. He breaks away from Wooly, just as Waxer comes with a drawn-out groan. Obi-Wan gasps, and Cody looks down. Down the sheer, gorgeous length of him, his Jedi, to find that Helix works quickly and he's bared miles of skin to their hungry eyes. Perfect and swollen, flushed and angry red at the tip, Obi-Wan's cock curves to rest flat against his abdominals, and Cody's mouth goes drier than Tatooine. Between his spread legs, Helix is mouthing at Obi-Wan's thighs, earning these incredible little sounds, gasps and ohs and crips. Cody slides a hand down and across the tightly built muscle of Obi-Wan's chest, groping lazily at his pecs as he watches Helix work magic with his lips and tongue and teeth until their general is twitching and damn near squirming with the tease.
Please, Helix, please,
he begs. Cody damn near loses it from that sound alone. But surprisingly, Helix doesn't trail his mouth upwards to capture Obi-Wan's throbbing DC. Instead, with a truly devilish smirk, he dips down.
Oh!
Longshot gasps, kneeling behind Helix and staring with comically wide eyes.
Oh, Commander, he's got a Dala!
He announces to a chorus of groans from the amassed Voda.
Kark, griffing karking ship, we're...
The knowledge sits as hot as molten lava in his gut.
Cody presses up into the warm, solid heat of Obi-Wan's back, a deliciously teasing pleasure on his already throbbing cock. Obi-Wan tosses his head back, thunking dully on Cody's shoulder, and laughs, breathless and delighted. "That's certainly an enthusiastic reception," he remarks casually, as if Helix's tongue isn't buried to the hilt in his cunt. Helix pulls away, his lips and chin glistening. Cody wants to chase the taste out of his wet, shining mouth. "If you're still forming sentences, I'm gonna have to try harder," he comments, dry even through his smirking. "Or let one of us take a turn," Longshot demands, still staring between Obi-Wan's thighs like his Dala holds the key to the karking universe. Helix hums, bemused. "Later, considering I was the only one that knew what our general here was packing, I have seniority." He flashes a full-toothed smile back over his shoulder. "Watch and learn, Vodika." Obi-Wan laughs again, breathless, and Cody's never felt him so incandescent with joy. The laugh trails off into a high whine when Helix swoops back in, and that whine becomes a swallowed groan when Chris swaps with Wooly to capture Obi-Wan's kiss-swollen lips. "So criffing perfect, Obi-Wan," Cody can't help but murmur. The muscles in his abdomen jump as Cody gently scrapes his nails against his navel. "Gods, just look at you." In a moment of pure genius, born entirely out of a desire that is frying his every last brain cell, Cody locks eyes with a waxer who's sucking his own mess off Boyle's fingers and has an idea. "Can waxer get you wet, Obi-Wan?" he asks and glides the lightest possible touch up the length of his cock. Obi-Wan's lips come free from Chris's with a sinfully wet pop, and a moan that's nothing but sex bursts out of him. "Oh, fuck, Cody, please," he gasps, grinding down onto Helix's face. Cody captures his hips with his hands, holding him still and tight enough to bruise. "Yeah, you want him and Helix to work you over," he teases, drawing his fingers up that perfect DC again. "Yes, yes, gods, yes," Obi-Wan gasps, his own hands going bruised tight around Cody's thighs as he braces himself against what must be an onslaught of sensation with a hand on nearly every single part of him and Helix working him thoroughly. "Anything, all of it, please." Waxer descends on that perfect cock like a man starved, Boyle's hand tight around the base of his neck, controlling the up-down slide of his redeemer's mouth. Orgasm takes Obi-Wan like a gut punch, his back bowing impressively as he wails his climax out, nails digging deep into the meat of Cody's thighs. Gods, he hopes it leaves a mark. Waxer pulls off first with a wet sound, gasping, awed. He didn't come out his DC. With a deeply felt air of self-satisfaction, Helix surfaces from between the general's quivering thighs, his face positively dripping. "Nope," he confirms. "Here, Longshot, you ever get your fingers inside a Dala before?" "Oh, fucking Sith hells!" Longshot groans, hand disappearing behind Waxer's head as Boyle guides him back down onto Obi-Wan's leaking cock. "Sith fucking Kata, he's fluttering inside." "Make it sloppy," Boyle is saying, stripping his own cock mercilessly. "Come on, Kiare, drool on it." Obi-Wan whines. "What do you need, Kiare?" Cody asks, his own arousal gone so hard it borders on pain. "Tell me, what do you want? We'll give you anything, Obi-Wan. Anything." "I'm close," he bites out, voice wrecked. "And I want to come with you inside me." It takes every single ounce of self-control Cody possesses not to blow it all right there.
He gathers himself with a harsh bite to the inside of his lip and signals, "Move," to the others. Obi-Wan makes a truly bereft sound when Boyle hauls Waxer off his cock and onto his own, fucking ruthlessly into his redoer's throat. And who Griffing knew that Waxer didn't have a gag reflex? Longshot and Helix shuffle out of the way, Helix murmuring straight porn into Longshot's ear. They rearrange until Obi-Wan is laid out flat across Cody's chest, Cody's feet braced on the lower level of the mattress. Chris slides around and kneels between Obi-Wan's thighs, sliding one finger into him before Obi-Wan bats his hand away with a sharp, "No, don't stretch me. I want to feel it." That has Cody's head damn near spinning. "What if I want to keep your DC warm while the commander fucks you?" Chris offers, dropping his mouth open suggestively. Buried in the dead center of his tongue is a little gold ball. 2/12 gold. Obi-Wan slides a hand into Chris's thick curls and lets out the loveliest little, "Please? Let me get inside of him first, Vod," Cody murmurs, nudging Chris away with a gentle kick. "Kiare, are you sure you don't want more prep?" he asks. Obi-Wan's hair, smelling faintly of bacta, tickles his nose as he mouths at the space behind his ear. Obi-Wan reaches back, hooking his fingers behind Cody's neck, and there's a challenge in him when he says, coy, "No, darling, I want to feel you for days." With a growl that Cody couldn't bite back if he had a criffing slug thrower to his head, he reaches beneath Obi-Wan's ass to grip the base of his own cock. Obediently, Obi-Wan lifts his lips, and suddenly the head of his DC is kissing an enticing wetness. Just the slick, slipping rub of his cock against his wet outer lips has Cody's knees going weak. The damp curls there are a delicious bit of friction. "Oh, Force, please," Cody moans and slowly eases himself down. Cody clenches every muscle in his body in an effort to stave off his impending orgasm. He's tight, so fucking tight, and the widest part of his head catches on the first fluttering ring of muscle. Obi-Wan pants, gasping in time to Cody's own rasping breath. And that's when Chris swoops in and swallows Obi-Wan down to the hilt. With a wordless cry, Cody breaches him fully, squeezed impossibly tight as Obi-Wan drops slowly down the length of him until they're pressed flat together again. "Cody, Cody, Cody!" Obi-Wan is chanting, hands scrabbling at the bedding beneath them. Someone takes them up, maybe Boyle or maybe Wooly. But Cody can't tell who because he's busy reciting the regs manual from memory in a desperate effort to make this last for longer than a minute. The heat of him is incandescent, a supernova wrapped around Cody's throbbing cock. He can feel Obi-Wan's heart pulsing in his slick inner walls and thinks, desperate, that this is how he wants to go out. If Grievous showed up and stuck a lightsaber through his chest just like this, Cody would die a happy man. "Damn it, Cody, move!" Obi-Wan demands, needy and carking perfect, and Cody has never been able to deny him anything when he asks for it. Feet braced flat on the cots beneath them, Cody snaps his hips up hard, shoving Obi-Wan down onto him with both hands tight around his waist. He wails, a sound utterly wanton and lost, and Cody isn't going to last. He thinks, half mad, that it's a rather good thing that there's hundreds of Vode in this room alone, enough to fill Obi-Wan until he's well and truly sated. And the picture that paints in his mind is a knockout. Another 2, 3, 4 desperate thrusts, and Cody comes with a soundless scream. They go until the general can't anymore. He's exhausted, pale face flushed a gorgeous red to match his hair and his swollen lips, but beaming, so genuinely filled with joy that it must be reaching the rest of them somehow, through the Force maybe.
Obi-Wan comes down from his last planet-shattering orgasm, draped across Cody's chest, a mess of fluids trapped between them. He's drawing nonsense patterns on his back, drifting to the sound of his vode finding their own releases, and the steady stream of nonstop filth coming from Helix, who's still fucking into Longshot like a goddamn machine. Cody, Obi-Wan murmurs. He gets the feeling that Obi-Wan is saying his name just for the sake of it. Obi-Wan, he returns. And they drift off together. Obi-Wan jolts awake all at once, and immediately, every Vod within a 6-foot radius is awake and primed for an attack. His blue eyes are wild in the dim light of the barracks.
Kyare, what's wrong?
Cody asks, voice still raspy from sleep. Obi-Wan fumbles for his hand, gripping tight enough to draw blood with his nails. The Chancellor is a Sith, Obi-Wan declares with all the subtlety of a sledgehammer.
The fuck? Boyle snaps, incredulous.
It's so clear, out here, away from the darkness of the core, he murmurs, incomprehensible, but there's no denying the horror clear in his face. Dooku told me there's a Sith in the Senate, and it's so crippling obvious. The emergency powers, the unidentified leak in Republic intelligence, the obsession with Anakin. It's Palpatine. It's been Palpatine all along.
Well, Kark, Chris says.
Helix, half asleep, grumbles into the back of Cody's thigh.
Nissa Tarnarir, Keshebs.
Obi-Wan is leveraging himself up to move, but Cody quickly eases him back down.
In the morning, Kyare, we have time.
He grumbles something fierce, but eventually capitulates. Stubborn down to the last. Who would have known that winding fingers through the general's hair is the quickest way to persuade him to settle down? They have time. They have him. All of them. And he has them. And it turns out, they really do. In the early hours of the morning, the final candle left burning on the observation deck goes out. Their general is home. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic and feel like leaving feedback for both me and or for the author, you're more than welcome to. You can find this podfic wherever you found it to download it originally, and from there you can find a link to the text post. Thanks for listening.